Let's do this. The Cult of Hockey podcast by the faithful and for the faithful. I'm David Staples of the Edmonton Journal. And I'm here tonight with old sharp eyes, Bruce McCurdy. Hey, Bruce.
Oh, bleary eyes, Bruce McCurdy, tonight, man.
Oh, God, that was terrible last night. That game, I mean, it was exciting.
Yeah.
But it just, that game. When you're doing game grades and scoring chances, Bruce, like, wow. Scoring chances
periods is a lot, eh?
It's intense work to do it. You're breaking it down. You're watching everything. You're looking for these scoring chances, and like seven periods of it in one night. That's a lot of scoring chances. Wasn't actually that many scoring chances, but so now Bruce, this podcast is called The Condors Falling ? And Ken Holland Rising ? So we'll start with the Condors, and they're down 2-0 to the San Diego Gulls, and as you will vouch for me now, Bruce, I'm sure I predicted at the start of this series to you in conversation that I thought that the Condors were going to lose this series, and I did so because I looked at the San Diego roster, and they are just loaded with veteran players. This is a very veteran team, and then at the last moment they've added some young talent, Comtois, who's scored some key goals here, Max Comtois.
Two game-winning goals in two games.
Exactly. So they have the young talent, but they just have more veteran. They just have that many more veteran players. They're a much more veteran team. This is like the team that Dallas Eakins won the AHL championship with the year before, or this 2 years before he came to the Oilers. This is Eakins knows how to win in the AHL, and he's put together another team that's going to, I think, be a very serious contender. I think Bakersfield
tonight. Tonight they brought Adam Cracknell, former Edmonton Oiler, Adam Cracknell down from the press box. And he was outstanding in this game. I thought he was the best player on either team.
He's like a veteran at this level.
Yeah, and he was fresher than anybody, and he really took it to him and played hard. Yeah. I think he had 8 shots on net. He had a goal, a couple assists. And, you know, he's a pretty good player. He's one of those guys, he can't score at the NHL level, but at the AHL, he's got a lot of game.
So, Bruce, let's go through the players who might make the Oilers next year on the Bakersfield roster and just talk about their performance in the last couple games and through the playoffs. And, you know, because we've both been watching them now for a fairly good chunk of games here and kind of have a take on each guy and their chances of making the Oilers. So let's start with William Lagesson. What have you thought of him this game, the last couple games, and overall?
High event is what I'm seeing out of Lagesson, and that's obviously good and bad. He really gets involved. I like his aggressiveness. I like his gamesmanship. But he's prone to making to lapses. A couple of costly giveaways. One absolutely horrible one in game one, where he fired the puck right to the goal scorer, right in the low slot, the 1-1 goal. And then tonight, he failed to clear a puck on the first goal. Wasn't quite as egregious a mistake as the one last night, but it was a turnover that led to a goal. And he's going to have to tighten up that part of his game if he wants to make a dent in the NHL.
Yeah, so he just turned 23 in February. 6'2", 207 pounds, first year in the AHL after playing 2 years of U.S. college and 1 year in Sweden. So he's 23. This is a pivotal year in his development, and I think it's been actually a really good year for him,
and it
has established him as a real prospect, for the Edmonton Oilers with a chance of making the team next year, maybe in a seventh defenseman role. He kind of plays both sides. He's big. He's physical. But you know, you're right, Bruce. He does have that tendency to turn over the puck and also to lose players now and then in the defensive zone, like not completely play his position, but he's a dynamic player at the same time. So this is his time this fall. There's all these players coming up. You know, there's Samarukov and Bouchard coming up behind him. And for both him and Jones and Bear, this is it right now, I think. And I wouldn't be surprised to see him as a seventh D man on the Oilers. I don't think it would be a bad thing. Although I could also see him playing another year, half year in Bakersfield and that not hurting his development. In terms of getting the North American game down, getting settled as a pro, just that much firmer, that much, that more consistent, and as a professional hockey player. Evan Bouchard. We've seen him two games now, or three, I guess.
Four games that he's played in, but in the second and third games, he barely saw any ice time at all. And last night, he was the seventh D-man with a bullet. And he, you know, again, despite the huge duration of the game, I doubt if he played as many as 10 minutes.
It was a mistake, Bruce. Like, frankly, like I don't mind them working him in slowly, but when you're in overtime like that, they needed a goal.
Yeah,
he can create a goal.
Well, and that caused a big problem for him on the ratio because they had the 11 forwards, 7 defensemen. So they didn't have a full fourth line. And last night was even in regulation, they were basically down to 9 forwards. And the longer the game went, the more it was those guys starting to run on empty and thinking, well, if they don't win this game, tomorrow night's going to be real, real hard, which is indeed how it turned out. And tonight,
what did you think of Bouchard tonight?
Tonight he went back to 12-6, and the one result of that was Bouchard got a regular shift for the entire game. I saw things that I liked, mostly with the puck. Saw things I didn't like, mostly without the puck, and that matches what I've previously seen with this player. He's got nice wheels, you know. There was a couple of times where he just sort of put it into gear and he left the forecheckers in his wake as he ripped out of the defensive zone and up ice with the puck. I like that. I like that he loves to shoot. That's something he'll learn to pick his spots, but I don't mind that his first instinct is to let fly because that shot that he has is a big weapon. And the breakout passes are just so good. That's his
Yeah, although one breakout pass, he got a little soft on it, got picked off, and it was a goal, led to a goal against. So he and McLeod didn't take the guy in the slot. Dylan Wells, three rookies made mistakes.
Oh, right. Yeah, that was rookies. A turnover.
Bouchard
yeah.
turns it over in the corner.
Mm-hmm.
McLeod doesn't cover in front of the net. The rookie goalie lets a bad rebound into mm-hmm. the slot area, and it's 2-0. And that was really the game on a certain level. Like Bakersfield, Cooper Marody is such a key player for the Bakersfield Condor. He was their top point per game guy. He's at this level of play, Cooper Marody is like the Patrick Kane of the Bakersfield Condors. He flies around the ice with a puck on his stick. And he got injured by the jackass Cale Kessy.
Another former Oiler prospect.
Into the boards. And that huge, absolutely huge loss for the Condors. Mm-hmm. And they don't seem to me like they're a very good team. I really like the Condors and the way they play hockey and they hustle and they work hard. But right now they don't have the offensive pop that comes with having Marody and Benson and Curry on that second line. That second line is okay, but it's not great. It's great.
Without Marody, they're pretty average, unfortunately. The come down from Marody to Luke Esposito, he's not a bad player, but he's not a top sixer.
I like Luke Esposito a lot, and I thought he played well in the overtime, but he's not. Mm-hmm. He's not going to create goals like that. And anyway, I like that Bouchard was in the lineup. I think, you know, they need someone who can create offense. I thought it was going to most likely come from the blue line if it did, from a shot from the point. And he did get one wicked shot. And I agree with your assessment of him. Some good moments and some bad moments. Good to see him in the lineup. Ryan McLeod, his first game for the Bakersfield Condors. What'd you think?
Pretty all right. I mean, he was, I think, a little bit defensively lax on the second goal. He was kind of no man's land, and he didn't really read where the danger was. And, I mean, he was down low in the zone, but he wasn't covering anybody.
The red light zone.
Yeah, there.
That's where he was.
But he had, I thought he came on pretty good in the third period. He helped on the one goal with a good play to gain possession and another good play to screen the goalie, and showed some good speed. He almost broke away. He got got between the defense and took a pass, but it didn't 100% click. But his speed stood out. I would like to have seen him skating at them a little more, given the heavy legs that had to be out there for both teams in this situation. So kind of mixed passing grade. I'll give him a passing grade tonight, but won't be a rave review.
Yeah, he made a nice screen on Ethan Bear's goal, and then he mm-hmm. had another screen, and he almost scored himself. He got his stick on the puck.
My deflection.
Jones took the shot. Let's talk about Caleb Jones. I'll start out. I just thought he was head and shoulders above every other prospect on this team right now. He's playing with such confidence, Bruce. He's skating so well. He's fast. He's aggressive with the puck. He's smart with it. He does have some, you know, he's not perfect. He'll make mistakes now and then that lead to scoring chances against. Man, he attacks well on, and he's just so mobile, so fast. Mm-hmm. He's a very strong passer of the puck. Again, I've made this comparison. I didn't see Andre Sekera when he was young, but I can imagine Andre Sekera kind of looking like Caleb Jones in the as he was coming out of the American Hockey League to the Buffalo Sabres.
Mm-hmm.
He's that kind of player, very smart, heady. I think he's going to get more and more consistent and sound. And he should have been on, like, I would never have sent him down to the AHL again this year. I don't know why Manning and Petrovic were brought in over Jones. Frankly, you know, it doesn't hurt Jones. It hurt the Oilers.
Yep.
And it was a disaster for the Oilers in terms of losing draft picks and making a bad trade. A draft pick in Petrovic's case, they did not need to lose at all, which really hurts. And then the Manning trade, you know. I didn't mind seeing Kajula go.
Manning's not even playing for the Condors now. And even tonight, when they, you know, they had all those guys that played all those minutes last night, he still was a forgotten man. They brought in a couple of fresh forwards. No Manning.
Here's what kills me, Bruce. They have Ryan Stanton, who's 29 years old. He's a veteran NHLer in Bakersfield this year. He's a better player than Brandon Manning. Ryan Stanton is actually quite a smart hockey player with the puck. Mm-hmm. Makes clever passes. He's very sound defensively. He's as good as Kevin Gravel, I think.
Mm-hmm.
He's better than Manning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Why don't they give him a chance instead of trading for, bloody God, the moves that Shirelli made in the last year are so infuriating.
Just one after another. Like there's no defense for the Manning trade, no matter how many different ways you look at it. Like, is he a guy that teammates wanted to bring in and have as an Oiler? No. Did the guy they trade was a guy that they liked that they wanted to be an Oiler? Yes. You know, was he the style of player they needed? No. Is he a guy who they were able to fit in under the salary cap? No. Is he a salary that they were able to clear at the end of the season? No. Can he play hockey? Not very well. You know, it's just.
I think Hitchcock wanted him.
Infuriating trade. And it's a clear sign that Shirelli had lost the plot, frankly.
Yeah. Yeah. He was, well, I think, you know, rumor has it, it's Hitchcock wanted it. And I think he was tired of Kajula. I was tired of Kajula as well, I have to admit. Okay. What do you think of Jones? Did you give me your take on Jones?
I loved his game last night. I thought, and he played a ton. Tonight, he started off fairly conservative, and when they got behind, he started to push the play a little bit. And the more he pushed, the more impact that he had on the game. And by pushing, I simply mean getting the puck in his own zone and taking off with it and bringing it up into the neutral zone and help establish the attack. And, you know, unfortunately, I mean, he was like so many players tonight that played 40 minutes last night and had like 18 hours to recover and play another playoff game. I mean, it was a good test and probably an experience that will serve these boys well in the longer run.
He probably played 50 minutes last night.
It was a tall order for them to. Yeah, you're right. I mean, the game was 124 minutes long. He probably did play 50.
Josh Curry. The
thing that constantly surprises me about Josh Curry is how physical he is. And he likes mashing guys. Like, he really crunched a guy with an open ice hit tonight. And he was on the receiving end of one where he took a shot, looked like in the head, and kind of slowed him down. But it didn't. Like cow him in any way because he threw two beauty checks that I saw later in the game, and he's skilled with the puck. He's got some. He's got quite a bit of game. He's a tweener. Like he's a good guy to have in the organization. Might he make the orders? Maybe. Might he make, 12, 13, 14 forward? Sure. Might he make top six? No, I don't think so.
No. Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's three guys, Patrick Russell, Joe Gambardella, and Josh Curry, who I think are all on the same boat. And I think this is, I would order them. My personal order would probably be, I like Gambardella the best, then Russell, and then Curry. I think Gambardella and Russell bring a little bit more in the way of physical play, penalty killing, checking. They're all aggressive. I like all three of these players. And I'd like to see actually two of them. Like if that was the Oilers' fourth line, Bruce, I'd be okay with that. Like, I don't think that would be, I think that would be a good, it would be at least an okay. It would be a better fourth line than they had last year, the Edmonton Oilers had, and a heck of a lot cheaper. So I'd like to see the Oilers keep open two spots for those three players to compete for. And, so I'll just quickly go over Gambardella and Russell. Gambardella at this level is the absolute engine of this team. He's their on ice leader, I think. And he's physical. He's good with the puck. He's skilled for this level. He makes all kinds of plays, scores big goals.
He's relentless.
Yeah. And Russell is, I never thought Patrick Russell was going to be a pro prospect watching him for his first year or two in the AHL, but he's really come on. He's raised his skating and his skill level. He always had the hustle. Mm-hmm. Now he's making plays with the puck, passing and shooting it very well at this level. And to the extent and where I think he's got a chance to. So the Oilers are, they've got some pro hockey players. They have some NHL players who are really cheap, and they're going to give players like Chidrick Kyra and others like that, Milan Lucic. If Lucic didn't have that big contract, I'd rather have one of these guys in the lineup at this point. They just play with so much hunger and desire. And I think once they get their confidence at the NHL level, which is a big thing and hard to do, they could be decent bottom line players.
Yeah, I certainly like Patrick Russell's game, and I have for a while. But, like even last summer when we had him ranked at, I think, as our number 26 prospect or something, and I remember writing the brief review and saying, I still think he has a shot at playing some NHL games this year. And it turned out that he did. And I think he has a shot at playing more NHL games next year because he's a pretty reliable player.
He's probably the best skater, right?
He's got some offense to him. Like he had 10 shots on net last night, 10 shots.
Yeah. He didn't get much done tonight. I think he was.
He was one of the, one of the many that just weren't really able to get the rubber out of their legs, that's a tall order for anyone.
Now we come to Ethan Bear, the Kurt Giles of the Bakersfield Condors. he has become a darn good AHL player. He's quite efficient defensively and offensively. Mm-hmm. Really settled in, and he has a chance to get some games with the Oilers. I like him the least of, like, if Lagesson, Jones, and Bear. I have Bear third on the list just because he's smaller, doesn't skate quite as well as the other two. His physical tools aren't as good, but I think he really thinks the game at a good level, at a high level, and he scored a lovely goal tonight, just hammered it in. Now, when we any talk about Ethan Bear has got at this point right now in time. It's got to start with the worst call ever, Bruce.
Oh, man.
The worst call ever?
No.
Maybe not. Maybe not the worst call
that
ever.
That happened to Finland's women's team in the world gold medal game.
It wasn't that consequential, right? So you need both a terrible call and a totally
was consequential. Pretty consequential.
Well, it was for an AHL.
Probably decided the series, David.
But. So the play is Bear's coming out in his own end, advancing the puck. He's got the puck on a stick. He's charging out from behind his own net into the slot area, and he gets blatantly tripped. He just gets out and out tripped. The puck goes to a Gulls player who quickly passes it over, bam, in the net. Like, it's all within 2 seconds. Mm-hmm. Trip, puck over, bam, boom. That's how long it took. It's a...
That's inexcusable. Like, how could two referees miss that? Like, what were they looking at if they didn't see that? Like, the guy had the puck. There was no screens, nobody around him. come up behind the net. The guy hacked him to the ice and they scored. And it's like the referees are.
Hell of a place to take a dive. You know, if they thought he was taking a dive, that's a hell of a place to take a dive.
That was the tying goal. And what was it, 80 minutes later that they finally got the winner? Yeah. I was hoping that ref had like a 6 a.m. wake-up call this morning after costing himself 3 hours of additional work of unpaid overtime with that tying goal. But that's me and refs. They make mistakes too. But that one was – it's just hard to explain. How the hell do you miss that?
It was
like, – take the tripping penalty out of the books. Like it should be called 100 out of 100 times. Like there was zero doubt that was a foul.
It was so obvious. It was so obvious. I mean, you have to call that. It's a penalty every time.
Yep. And
Bakersfield probably would have won that game, Bruce. They probably would have killed
off. Well, they just scored to go ahead 2-1. Was bang, right away. And
they were the better team that night up until then. And I think they would have won that game. Shane Sterrett was playing very well in net.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you think of Bear?
Well, I like some of his defensive plays. I think his reads are getting better. That was his big problem when he was here up last year.
Yeah.
Was he was just always late reacting. But there's a couple of plays where he got burned, and one of them was the overtime winner, unfortunately.
He did, yeah.
And Tyler Vessel.
Vessel, I should say.
Vessel, yeah.
And Vessel made another bad play tonight, a turnover that led to the third.
He had a tough game.
Do that, man. Like this is the difference between San Diego and Bakersfield. That like San Diego doesn't like their Vessel's two or three years older.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't make that play. They're just a more experienced team. What do you think? So can Bear make it next year, Bruce, or not? Do you have him third? Like do you have him placed right behind Lagesson and Jones?
Behind Jones for sure at this point. And Lagesson, to me, he's a real wild card. And, I mean, the question is, because I don't think we've seen anything close to his ceiling yet.
So yeah.
What happens when he takes the next step? Like, does he just thrust himself into the conversation? I think there's a real possibility that happens.
Yeah, William Igor Ulyanov Lagesson.
I have a great story about Igor Ulyanov that I'll tell you sometime. Probably not tonight.
Okay. All right. Hey, let's move on, Bruce, to the Ken Holland rumors.
Okay.
Okay, so Elliot Friedman, I guess I didn't see this. Was it on TV? But it's all over Twitter.
Yeah, I saw it.
Okay, so he's saying the Oilers have offered $5 million over 5 years for Ken Holland.
That's $5 million per year, right? Not like a total of $5
million. Excuse me, $5 million per year. Not a million a year, but $25 million. That's a lot of money, Bruce. Of course, Ken Holland probably has a lot of money already, but so Bruce, okay.
Plus, they're paying Milan Lucic, though.
I'm really hopeful that they can move Lucic. Erickson
litmus test of whoever's coming in here.
That what's his name? Noodle. I don't know if they want to make a trade for Erickson, but Erickson was ripping on the Vancouver coach in the Swedish.
I saw that.
So maybe like there's clearly a trade there to be made if the Oilers want to make it. I don't know if it's in their interest to make that particular trade. Mm-hmm. So Bruce, with all the Holland rumors, I went over his record and so let's start with the highlights of his record. 25 years straight when he was with the Detroit organization, that team made the playoffs. Think about that, 25 years straight, Bruce. Someone who's involved in running that team must be doing something right. It's not all just luck and momentum and one thing leading to another. Someone on a consistent basis was making the right call. Can we agree on that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay. From 1993 from 1993 to 2011, Bruce, 19 years, they were a serious Stanley Cup contender every single one of those years, 19 years straight.
Basically, the entire duration of Nick Lidstrom's career, they were. There's a very close correlation there.
That's a good way to put it. Well, this is if you want to spin Holland's career negatively, Bruce, and I have. Here's the spin. He benefited from one or two unbelievably good scouts.
Hakan Anderson.
They brought him Nicholas Lidstrom. They brought him and the span is kind of from Niklas Lidström in what year that was, 1989 that he was drafted, whatever that was, 89, mm-hmm. to Johan Franzén in 2004. And there, throughout that time, there was just year after year after year, they were finding players in the late rounds. So they found Zetterberg. They got Fedorov, mm-hmm. Sergei Fedorov. They got Pavel Datsyuk. They got Kozlov. Mm-hmm. They got and Konstantinov. When was he drafted? Now he got hurt, of course.
Yeah, he was a late. He was like something like a sixth round pick.
Cronwall,
Thomas Holmstrom.
Holmstrom. All these guys. You know, just it's incredible. So yeah. You could say, okay, Holland didn't have anything. He benefited from this unbelievable scout mm-hmm. who stocked his team with all that talent. When that scout ran dry or retired or whatever happened there, as soon as that happened, Ken Holland ended as a genius, as an NHL genius. And if we look at his last 10 years as a manager, I mean, his draft record is kind of mediocre at best, you know, under Tyler Wright, who's mm-hmm. rumored to be coming with him. Some of that time, and he's made some bad trades and bad signings. So he signed Trevor Daley's 3 years at $3 million per, Franz Nielsen 5 years at $5.25 million, Darren Helm 5 years at $3.85 million, Justin Abdelkader 7 years at $4.25 million, Steven Weiss 5 years at $4.9 million.
Hard and to make a players, case for any of those guys as a top six NHL player, frankly.
You mean on a top two, like first or second line? Yeah, I don't think any of them are, or top pairing D. In Daly's case, he's not. And he traded a 21-year-old Cali Yarncroc for an ineffective 33-year-old David Legwand at one point. So that's the indictment of him, is that mm-hmm. Not a lot is good. Not a lot of good has happened. Since that's, I wonder whatever happened to Håkan Andersson. A couple things hit home. It just made me think, like, how important is drafting, Bruce? How important is to have that scout or scouts who can find those players? Like, and it made me think if Keith Gretzky is that scout right now, who can find these diamonds in the rough? You sure don't want to lose him.
No. But I'm still waiting for one of these lower round picks to suddenly thrust himself right into the NHL in a year or two. And I mean, the odds are low for any one player, but somewhere in the scads of draft choices you make year after year, you got to hit a home run once in a while, or at least a double. And the Oilers got nothing. Like from round two on, it's just pathetic.
You know, and you're right, we could be
Carcara. It's the only guy on the team, really, I think, at this point.
We could be excited about Keith Gretzky and his picks, but you're right. Until one actually does it, we should contain mm-hmm. ourselves. So Samarukov, for instance, Dmitry Samarukov is just killing it in the OHL playoffs.
Yeah, a very exciting prospect, I'll say that much.
And he's more success, I think. But, you know, we were remember Stu McGregor was once called the Magnificent Bastard.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we were all excited about, I think, the 2011 draft with
2010 draft.
Or the 2010 draft with Marinson and Pitlick and Hamilton, Curtis Hamilton and
Ryan Martindale.
Magnificent Harvey. So, anyway, he didn't turn out to be so magnificent. It might be a little early to be excited about Gretzky, but I mean, Tyler Benson and Caleb Jones are damn close. Oh, we didn't talk about Benson tonight, which is interesting that he's not on my list because he's not on the forefront of my mind. To me, he hasn't actually stood out. Benson hasn't stood out in this playoff mm-hmm. as being head and shoulders above everybody else and ready for the NHL. What did you think of Benson so far?
He makes so many good passes.
He does.
And he has a very good understanding of where the good ice is. And he'll either duck into it himself or he'll find the passing lane and he'll find the open guy that's not in the direction that you'd expect. He's got great vision and imagination. And that's his calling card. And tonight I saw a number of really good passes, a couple of decent shots. He needs to work on his shot. That's one area that, you know, his buddy has 16 goals or something. That's some under impressive number of goals, 14 even, lots of assists. But he needs to develop that weapon finishing nail. He's smart and he's crafty. You know, I see him as a positive player and a guy who'd be a really good support player on probably a top six, or certainly a top nine NHL role.
Yeah, I think he's really Marody was not playing well in the first round against Colorado, which was a really kind of a team that liked to mug you rather than check you.
Mm-hmm.
And they mugged Marody.
They mugged him right out of the series.
Yeah, and he wasn't able. So that, you know, that's hockey in the playoffs often.
That's bullshit.
But yeah, it is.
What happened to him?
Totally. But Benson react like he's not the guy to carry the puck, you know, end to end, but he is the guy, you know, when the guy carries it in and then drops it off and wants the nice, good on go feed, given go feed,
mm-hmm.
Right on your stick. That's Benson. So I see him fitting so well with either, any of those guys, mm-hmm. Nugent Hopkins, McDavid or Draisaitl. He's going to fit like a glove real, real soon. Mm-hmm. And you're right. Like, it's not like he's been bad. He just hasn't been great because I don't think the team.
Nobody's finishing his.
No, like he just misses Marody. He misses his partner in crime, mm-hmm. and someone to work with. Yamamoto, they miss Yamamoto. Maybe Yamamoto and Benson might have combined well. Also, so they're missing two really highly skilled offensive players right now. So let's get back to Ken Holland, Bruce. If he gets, what's your take on him? Because I was negative. I'm a bit negative, but I saw this year end press conference with him, mm-hmm. in Detroit, and. I mean, 25 years in the playoffs, 4 Stanley Cup runs, 19 years in a row, Stanley Cup contender. You know, all teams do go down. Mm-hmm. You know, that there is that. I mean,
right.
You know, it wasn't going to last forever. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they got a lot of his spin on it right now is they got a lot of prospects, a lot of good young defensemen. They got some Rasmussen and Zadina. They got a ton of cap space coming up open. Mm-hmm. He's $15 million this year and $15 million the next year coming open. So that's what he's selling. So he has
too bad
those bad contracts. Those bad contracts, though, scare the hell out of me, is mm-hmm. the truth. But what? Where are you at with them?
I'm ambivalent. What I don't want to do and what I'm seeing happening all around me is people already casting judgment and saying it's a terrible choice to bring this guy in, just be typical Oilers to bring in some old buddy of Bob Nicholson or whatever the verbiage is. Whoever they hire, whether it's Keith Gretzky or anyone, if you got to give the guy room to breathe and state his vision and then pursue his vision and see what happens. I mean, I said the same thing with Peter Chiarelli. Turned out he was a crummy GM who got worse as the time went along. He came in with a vision. Vision didn't necessarily work out, but then the patchwork that he did afterwards was just disastrous. In the case of Holland, I mean, all of that experience, surely to God, there's some of the things he's picked up and learned along the way that won't repeat some of the very curious mistakes that the Oilers are noted for. I'd like to think that somebody be a little more polished. He's a lot more polished and just talking to the media, talking to the fans, Chiarelli was terrible at that. Now, you saw the Holland end of year presser. How did he impress you with his, just with his demeanor and his professionalism and his
command? After his first press conference, Bruce, people are going to love Ken Holland. He's mm-hmm. going to win over Oilers fans because he's very charismatic, friendly, gregarious, ambitious, passionate,
good, talkative,
articulate. And says a lot of smart things. He doesn't say a lot of things about grit, toughness,
well, either. That's, That's
so nice. that's gonna appease, you know, the most vocal.
How many times did he say culture?
Never. The most vocal critics of all things Oilers are the ones who love analytics and hate talk of grit. And, you know, they want Mike Gillis hired, or I don't know who they want hired, but I think that's who they want hired. And they're very critical, highly critical right now of Holland. And then there's other people who are, I'm also critical of Holland right now. And people in Detroit are critical of Holland right now because it hasn't gone well. And there's been a lot of dubious draft picks and signings. And that's what, that's what happened. So nonetheless, he does, you know, he talks about like the need to have like a, he's like for the Detroit's defense, they need to have some young guys, but not too many. Like I think he wants like two of them and then four older guys.
Right.
Because just for the right balance. So you don't throw these young guys under the bus and the team under the bus with too many young players. You know, he's been around hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of hockey players over time, seen their careers, seen those career paths, seen all the you know, he talked about being how he's been at the draft since 1985. And, you know, he says, just because someone says someone has potential, you don't put him in your lineup. There's all these young players with potential and very few of them meet it. It's just a very hard path. It just struck me as someone who's very aware of how hard a path it is to success in the NHL, and how hard a path it is to win the Stanley Cup. But his whole focus and his mindset is to win the Stanley Cup because he's done it four times. He's won four Stanley Cups. He's been a big part of those teams that did it. And I think he knows a thing or two about winning, Bruce.
If there was ever a concern.
I hate to say that, but as a manager, he won. He didn't win as a player and then saying that as a manager.
Right.
As a manager, he knows a thing or two about winning. And that's the truth.
That's a huge distinction you just made.
And he built four teams into Stanley Cup winners. He built it, you know, helped build a team for 25 years, 19 of them Stanley Cup contenders. So I'm kind of
sounds like you're
a little bit of this, a little bit of that. Yeah, I don't want to start out. The worst thing you can do, I think, personally, if you're gonna like be us and talk about hockey on Twitter and on a blog, and you know, is to take a strong stand at the start, because then you are hemmed in by your initial position. And everything you do after that is confirmation bias, as far as I'm concerned. It's all I've ever seen from anyone. If you take this really, really strong position at the start, which everyone thinks you must do, I think, in terms of commentary, but it's the worst thing you can do. just keep your powder dry and watch what happens. And then respond honestly. When he does something good, say that. When he does it bad, say that. But don't come out really strong at the start, either in favor of or against something as big as this, that is hard to judge, really hard for us to judge. I mean, we can point out all these things, but I don't think I want to come to any kind of final, like, is this a good hiring or a bad hiring? I mean, who knows? Let's see. That's my position.
You give the guy the keys for a while and you let him drive. And I mean, unless he drives you right into the ditch or into the oncoming semi in the first 5 minutes, I mean, there's no point in saying, you know, you took the wrong turn on the way to the grocery store. I mean, there's you got to give him some room to find his way. And if you're just going to beat down on him, like I say, I don't care who it is. That's not the attitude that's, well, I think going to do you as a fan much good. And it's, you know, there's so much negativity around this team, and so much of it is deserved, don't get me wrong. But if there's no shred of hope that the next guy is going to turn things around in some important ways, well,
I don't think he's going to come in here and clean house, though. Mm-hmm. Like, everyone thinks, let's hire Ken Holland. He's going to come in and clean house. I don't think that's not what's going to happen. I think he will do some of that, maybe quite a bit of it. But I don't think he's not someone who comes in and fires everybody. He's not like Donald Trump. But he and the other thing, the last few years, like Detroit has 3 second round draft picks this year, Bruce. And he's been trading away.
The last eight of their trades have been a player for a pick.
Yeah, he's been trading away to some older guys who he doesn't think fit with that team. I think maybe he got the rebuild wrong initially. Like, he was trying to extend the winning streak, right? And, right. And so, like, the Steven Weiss signing, like, Weiss was a good center at that point, and he's, like, what, probably 30, 29. Like, you can see the hope in trading for Legwon. You know, you're just trying to make that final playoff push. You're just – he extended it, and he made some mistakes, I think, in that point. So maybe one could hope, because what he was really stressing now in Detroit was just a really patient – approach to a deliberate, patient approach to team building and a rebuild of the Detroit Red Wings. And I don't actually think he's coming here, Bruce. I think he's so tied to the Red Wings. He's so Mr. Red Wing. He talked about that. He's like Mr. Red Wing, Red Wing, Red Wing, Red Wing, on and on and on. Like, he's been there since 83 or something. Like, he was drafted, played for the Adirondack team. I don't see it happening that he's coming here. Like, that's really what I think is.
How will that look on the Oilers, though? If you get, you know, Saturday Night Hockey Night in Canada crew talking about how they offered $25 million 5 years, full autonomy for Ken Holland, and he says, I don't think so. I mean, the Kelly McCrimmon one, like, McCrimmon, that was a good play by McCrimmon. He used the interest on other teams to get the same job with the place where he was at. But I just can't see how they would let it get this far into the open if it wasn't really going to happen.
My kind of thought about him coming, it kind of reminds me of Glenn Sather going to the New York Rangers in 2000. Mm-hmm. Sather was, how old was he then?
Yeah.
55.
Bill Torrey going to the Florida Panthers.
If it doesn't happen, I'm good with that. If it does, I'll be okay with that. I'll just let's just see how it goes. But I don't think it's going to happen.
Do you want to see him as a POHO or as a GM or both?
Well, I think he wants to be if he comes, he wants to be the GM. That was clear. Like, he still was glorying and being the GM of the Red Wings at that point.
Well, I hope he comes with a damn good assistant or two, or goes and hires a damn good assistant or two.
Well, I just hope he hires some really good draft people, because that's
that are experts in various areas.
Yeah.
Somebody who's a cap wizard, someone who's a draft wizard, someone who's a pro scout wizard that can uncover actual gems from the NHL to
come. Well, I'd love to see Keith Gretzky and Bob Green remain with the Oilers, and both of those guys working amateur and pro. Tyler Wright's record in Columbus and Detroit is, I'm not going to say anything right now because I haven't looked at it closely enough. Initially, I was thinking it's really bad, but I was looking at his Columbus work, Tyler Wright's Columbus work, and it's too early to judge his Detroit work is the other issue. But his Columbus work looks like it was pretty strong, actually.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll just leave it at that. Well, Bruce, you got to write your game grade.
I do.
Let's call it a night.
Yeah, it's been a long couple of days with these with yesterday's marathon, and you do the yeoman service of grading and doing the scoring chances last night in the extreme game, and tonight's just a little bit of cleanup. Unfortunately, there was not a very good hockey game.
Thanks for talking.
Thanks for listening, everyone.
And in the meantime, and in between times, this has been another edition of the Cult of Hockey podcast.